Good evening. Oops. Welcome to the last panel of the day on a very exciting topic, creating regulatory change management framework. So given the snow conditions, we are gonna skip the introductions and get right into the meat and potato of the topic. So our first question for the panelists from each of your perspectives, how are firms developing capabilities to help anticipate risk, track and analyze the regulatory updates? Wes, would you wanna?
Who's first?
Wes?
Oh, okay, hi. Well, I've worked in compliance for a long time, and I have to say, because of the lack of resources in compliance, compliance officers are naturally like MacGyver, right? They use whatever's available to them, and frankly, most of the tools we use in regulatory change management are Google and email. But I do see a lot of value in compliance simply informing people about what regulations, obligations, and procedures apply to them. And AI now provides us with that kind of capability. We use a framework between the organization and the regulation. So most regulations can be, you can determine the applicability of them based on a few dimensions of that regulation, such as the product or the activity or the jurisdiction. So using such a framework, it's possible to actually assign almost individual compliance manuals to individual people throughout a complex organization. So that's kind of our approach to improving compliance through better information about regulatory change and how that impacts different parts of the business.
Paul, what are your views from a holistic standpoint?
I think overall, when you look at anticipating regulatory change, especially when it goes through the legislative or regulatory process, there's a great deal of uncertainty as to the output in terms of during the course of, say, an average regulation in the United States, making it through congressional committees, making it through various levels of notice and comment period. And when you're typically tracking legislation, you're going to want to know as early as possible simply because you need to start doing your own gap assessment and understanding its impact on your business or business units over time, simply because especially dependent upon the implementation period of time, however short or long it may be, you need to be prepared. So that being said, I think that because of things like the ever-increasing pace that you see regulations coming in, or probably more recently slowing down, I suppose, you need to have a defined process for doing that. And I think in AI, repeating much of what Wes just said, you do have a sense of the immediacy and speed that it's offering. Things about the ability to integrate with existing tools, I think, is a factor that also has to be considered, because tracking or anticipating regulations and how they're going to come about has been around for a long time. It's already well embedded through compliance and legal practitioners. I also think that being able to be agile throughout that process makes a lot of sense, simply because you're dealing with ever-continuing changes, and that's why AI technology actually makes sense.
That's a great point. Having an agile end-to-end regulatory framework is really important. Sharman, what are your thoughts on risk ecosystems as well as tracking the regulatory updates?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think just in terms of developing a capability around that, it's got to be the framework. You've got to have a framework that, you just said it before, being agile enough, it's got to be able to respond to something new, look at how you're going to deal with the particular change component of it's coming in, plus the monitoring aspect of it. And then I think as we think about things like ecosystems, it's really about understanding what's in your risk ecosystem. And it might be more than one sort of ecosystem. There might be a component that sits out there around, you've heard some of the people talk today around GRC. It might be an AI one. It might be a specific one around Greg Data Intel. There's a lot of things that you need to consider about how those different components are going to sit there and work together and talk together. And I think that's really, for me, the first part about sort of that framework. How do you define, how do you implement, and how do you keep that sort of fresh? And then I think the second part of it is just technology and resources. We're at a RegTech summit today. You've all heard many people talk about different aspects of what, you know, goes into being a good RegTech environment and in our own sort of companies. But you've got to think about the technology aspect of it. You know, are you using technology in a strategic manner? Are you thinking about today's needs? Are you thinking about what you're going to need in 5 years' time, that emerging risk component of it? You've got to also look at the buy versus sort of build component. A lot of places now are seeing there's a lot of sophistication. There's a lot of intelligence, you know, particularly with the AI, machine learning, semantic technologies that are out there. Those things all together sort of go hand in hand with being able to set up that sort of framework, set up that ecosystem and that long sort of longevity view of where you want to go in the future.
Tim, what do you think?
So the part of the question that I want to address is the part about anticipating risk. So a couple panels ago, Ali mentioned a real focus on and desire to be able to make risk-based decisions in compliance. And at Corelytics, that's the primary thing that we're doing. We're developing an understanding of regulation risk, and then we apply that ideally, we'll help our customers identify, assess, control regulatory risk, and apply that in the context of a reg change management program and other compliance operational processes. The other thing I want to comment on this is just in the industry, one thing I've noticed is that a number of firms have created emerging risk functions within compliance. It's almost as if it's a pillar within compliance. And the discipline here is, you know, native digital approach to understanding a variety of different types of information and be able to draw conclusions and understanding about emerging risks, and then to be able to act on those in the context of a reg change program. So I think that's going to continue to evolve and mature and kind of fit with the framework approach that Charmaine mentioned.
Yeah, I think just to add to that, the component of being able to have the early warning signs is where the technology component comes in, so you can look at what those emerging risks are. And quite often, you know, we're a little bit surprised when a regulator, you know, comes along and discovers something, or we hear about an event in the marketplace and we come back and we do our own assessment in our organisation to see, can that happen to us? And it's about having those early warning signs. So a lot of things that we've just spoken about are the components that help build, you know, the cake at the end of the day with the right ingredients.
So Charmaine, you mentioned earlier about semantic technologies. What progress have you seen in standard-based semantic technologies and machine-readable text for interpretation of the regulatory rules and updates?
Yeah, I think the most easiest way to start off is saying that semantic technologies, they're not new. They've been around for a while. You know, just thinking about the way that they encode different meanings separately from data and content. I think the biggest part of why we're seeing a lot of developments in it now is technology is just advanced. We've gotten to a point where those advancements in even machine learning or AI or some of the other things you've heard people, you know, on today's panel speak about, they're making things just more effective. They're making things more affordable and really at the end of the day more adaptable for how different businesses can take that technology and use it and adapt it into their own organisations for their processes, how it links back to policies and procedures. And, you know, it's all good and well to say that in terms of the progress it's making, but I think from an adoption perspective, there's still a few barriers that sit there and stop a lot of companies from jumping on board. And it might not be driven specifically by the size of an organisation or whether or not they have money to invest in a sandbox. Some do, which is great, because they're our leaders, but there's still going to be some that are still worried about how far it's going to advance. Will there be more advancement coming, and therefore they're jumping in too early to it? What's the cost of it? What's our return on investment? Even things like management's appetite for change or to invest in that particular technology. I think there's a number of different things about they think about, well, are we all speaking the same language across our organisation to be able to use, you know, the same semantics and the same machine-readable text to understand things? And I don't know if anybody just sort of saw the Deloitte paper that came out today saying that regulators are actually now focusing on using a lot of machine-readable solutions to be able to analyse their own sets of regulations to see how much crossover and overlap there is between what they've currently got and what other regulators have and what they're looking at going forward. So there's a lot of things that are moving in this area, and it's just about a matter of how we keep up from, you know, a vendor perspective, but also our own organisations in finance to make that the right sort of move forward.
Tim, I see you smiling. You want to pitch in?
Sure, yeah. Well, Wes will have some very interesting comments because he's he kind of taught me a lot of this stuff. But I'll just add that there's a number of initiatives that are taking place in terms of semantically structuring content. So a number of the regulators have initiatives to create machine-readable rule books or robo-rule books. And there's also some firms that have gone to pretty far lengths to create the RDF graphs and such. So that's happening. I think, though, that there's a long way to go for practical applications. I think for anybody to utilize a graph, there has to be application capability. And that's a big investment. I think that's probably coming. I think it's a big opportunity to create, you know, for example, a library of Sparkle queries and such to be able to develop on and standardize across. So I'm really curious what Wes has.
Yeah. I just want to add, semantic technologies, let's start with machine learning. The buzzwords this year were about machine learning, and the market expects, you know, magic to happen, right? We can magically read all the regulations in Europe and understand what they say. Like, okay, first of all, I think it's more important that your compliance officers read the regulations, just saying. But for AI, all kinds of AI to work well, we have to define what is the world, what is true about the financial markets or safety regulations or whatever it is you're describing. And so the whole matter of semantic technology now is about how can we tap the knowledge of subject matter experts, right? You cannot rely on the glossaries that are out on the regulatory websites. If you get into this, you'll see, you know, even FINRA has copied definitions from MSRB, right, and have inappropriate definitions in their own glossaries.
Hopefully,
right?
We don't have anyone from FINRA in the audience.
So, you know, the real key is, you know, how do I, as a long-term compliance person, just sort of, you know, dump my brain into a computer chip? And, you know, the ontology is great, but ontology requires an ontologist who is essentially a philosopher with a computer. That creates a big gap to cross, and it's not as easy to describe things in ontology. Beyond ontology, there are technologies that we're using that still have a couple generations before full adoption where we can gather knowledge and represent it in software using English. And so that's kind of the area where we're working in. And it's becoming faster and faster to define things like what are the reporting requirements and what do they mean? Or if I'm provisioning data, here's the data that I have available. Here's a precise computer understandable file that explains what's in there. Or vice versa, if I'm integrating data from lots of different systems, tell me what the meaning is of that particular data item. So that's where I think we're going to approach standards. Yeah.
And that really ties to the next question I'm about to ask. So there are multiple regulatory requirements for multiple agencies, oversight agencies, and institutions are finding it inconsistent to find what exactly the requirement is. So this becomes even more complicated when there are cross-border jurisdictions, right, and multiple business operations. How can firms ensure robust compliance framework by creating a common regulatory taxonomy? Paul, you want to go first?
Yeah. I think that when you have, and perhaps many of you in financial institutions, consider the number of regulations, enactments, cross-border, international, realize if you were to just simply list all of it at one, perhaps, time, if you're bored or really, really, really want to do this, you wind up having a book. And the reality is, some of that book is important for you in your business, some not as much. I think on a previous panel, one of the speakers mentioned taking a risk-based approach based upon the impact of that, of the most important aspects of the regulation on your organization. That being said, to be able to make sense of this mass of information, its impact upon your business or businesses, where it has its greatest impact, and for whom, you almost need to have a common taxonomy. Now, that being said, there's various types of iteration. It has to be something that works best for your organization, not something that's prescribed, because ultimately there's not a common standard of how a taxonomy should look. In fact, I would almost argue that so long as that taxonomy makes sense for your organization to quickly understand your obligations under various regulations in various jurisdictions that you're doing business, then it has to be fit for purpose, which leads me to my next point, usability. Mm-hmm. If you wind up having to train people how to use the taxonomy, and a few weeks later they come back and they need more training, it's not intuitive enough or understandable enough, you might have to rethink your taxonomy. You're also going to need buy-in. You're going to need to have senior leaders believing that this is the way to go. Because one of the things when you start a taxonomy is it's a journey. It isn't just the first and only step you'll ever make, and it stays the same. Just the same as regulations change over time, your organization will change over time, its obligations in various jurisdictions change over time. And that means the taxonomy, the methodology that you're using to put together that taxonomy should also change over time.
Tim, what are your thoughts?
So I think that with the common regulatory taxonomy, it's important to start thinking from the point of view of the regulators. And one of the things about Corelytics, I'll just say this for the context of it, is that we rate risk rate regulation, and one way that we achieve that is by enriching data that we collect. One of the key elements of enrichment is the application of multiple dimensions of taxonomy, so it becomes critical for our ability to provide different lenses on regulation. We have an expertise in taxonomy development and application, and have done work with regulators directly. One thing that's public is work with the FCA. And I think that there's an interest in having common vocabulary terms amongst different regulators. There's talk of this, kind of public talk. And but it's going to take some time, and the utility to the industry would be tremendous if there's a common description of concepts that are interrelated, vocabulary terms, and so you understand, what a rule's about, what it applies to, and that's kind of endorsed by the regulators. That becomes extremely valuable when integrated into an RCM process. I think from the side of the firms, what I've experienced is that there's multiple risk taxonomies. It could be multiple by line of business and a number of other aspects, topics, et cetera. So it becomes a lot more difficult to create a common regulatory taxonomy at the firm level or among firms, or at least one that's not kind of limited or kind of light due to the fact that you have to achieve some level of common denominator. So I think it's coming, and it could be really valuable, but I think the regulators lead the way there.
Charmaine, what are your thoughts on addressing those challenges for creating common regulatory taxonomy?
It's a good question. I think probably a lot of people in the room, I see a few nods that have gone on as we've been speaking just about having a taxonomy and getting everybody on the same page. Being able to speak that same sort of language for what that taxonomy is, or those multiple taxonomies that are operating. And, for those that